It's 5:37 a.m. in Silicon Valley, and you're listening to Night Call. Hello and welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. We've gathered here together to defeat death.
We're going to defeat loneliness and strange days.
We're going to make the night last forever.
With just a small vial of blood.
We are all Elizabeth Holmes, but I am also Molly Lambert. With me today...
I'm Tess Lynch, and over in Austin, Texas today we have...
Emily Yoshida at the aforementioned Yoshida Innovation Hut in South by Southwest.
What are we cooking up at the Innovation Hut today?
Okay, we can't do this the entire podcast. I'm going to bit over for now. We can bring it back.
I don't think I might ever be able to stop.
It's really incredible.
It's addictive. Why are we talking this way, guys?
Well, we all watched The Inventor.
Out for Blood in Silicon Valley.
Which is going to be on HBO the Monday that you hear this, I suppose. It'll be on your TV or on your parents' HBO account that you...
We saw it in advance using the time machine Elizabeth Holmes invented as a child.
Yes. Just to clear something up really quick, this is not a sponsored post. We were so excited to see this documentary that we requested a screener. And so we're not being sponsored. We were just really excited to see this. And it's really good.
Access journalism, man.
Yep.
Could not have been more excited. We couldn't get Night Call into Cats for free, but we could get the Elizabeth Holmes documentary.
Before we get into The Inventor, can I give you guys a download quick on the scene in Austin, Texas?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Can we get a Momo minute about South by Southwest?
Yeah. A South by Second. I'm sure that's already a thing. I'm sure somebody else has already said that, so I feel gross for even saying it. But I'm really just on movies here. I've actually mercifully stayed away from a lot of the like more aggressive brand experiences and stuff like that. Although I did see like a very forlorn, like kind of big RV with sort of that tent awning thing sticking out of it for Pizza Hut. But it was like way in East Austin, or not like East Austin, but it was like kind of away from everything. And I think that there was like a Pizza Hut activation at Sundance this year that I never went to, but I heard about it. So Pizza Hut is on the hunt for
Pizza Hut
influencer.
It's on Night Call.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut. Did you guys ever do as a child Book It, where you would read a bunch of books to get a free Pizza Hut pizza?
I never liked Pizza Hut pizza. Sorry.
Roy,
I just blew our sponsorship.
Our producer is giving a thumbs up. I'm just saying it was the original brand activation. It was like trick smart kids who are like, I'm going to read all these books and I get a reward. Back to the Elizabeth Holmes voice.
Right.
And then you get like a free personal pan pizza and you're a kid. It was the best.
Never liked pizza as a kid. In fact, I didn't come around to pizza until Molly and I started eating the bacon cheeseburger pizza from Domino's in college.
That is true.
The bacon cheeseburger. Is that like a cowboy pizza? Is that what you're talking about?
What's a cowboy pizza?
Like a pizza with ground beef on it and cheddar cheese.
This is but also bacon. It also had bacon.
Yeah.
It sounds like it should be Midwestern.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it has its origins somewhere.
It was a gnarly time.
But we digress. Tell us about Austin.
We're just saying, we're not above trash pizza. Little Caesars, any trash pizza that wants to sponsor Night Call.
I'm going to draw the line at Domino's because...
Well, I love Domino's.
Oh, my God, no. Well, actually, they've remade it. Like, I guess they like changed their recipe since the last time I had a Domino's. So maybe I would love it now.
What's your cheap slice of choice?
My cheap slice of choice.
I guess you live in New York City.
I live in New York City. Also, I don't eat pizza anymore.
Oh, right, because you're lactose intolerant.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But now I've realized that I can order Two Boots, like an entire pizza. Like they actually deliver to my apartment. So I will occasionally get like their vegan pizza delivered, which is, it feels like a real treat. It feels super, super debaucherous to have a pizza. Like every time it comes, I'm like, look, it's a pizza. I ordered a pizza to our house and it's here now.
It's the most exciting thing about being an adult.
Yeah.
Is ordering pizza?
Yeah, being like, I want a pizza. I can just order one now, like Home Alone.
But you can order anything now.
I know. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be pizza.
Well, see, like, I order everything like under the sun. I just never get a pizza because I don't eat cheese. But then when I get a pizza, it's like I'm a real American now.
Right. As nerd girls, if I had told you you could like earn something by reading books, child, yeah, would have been a good,
it's a good,
well, a good carrot.
Speaking of being a totally like overachieving the middle
psychopath
no, but I'm well. This ties into Theranos, of course, but I just want to like quickly shout out Booksmart, which I saw last night.
Oh,
here.
I thought we were going straight to Theranos.
Well, they're like, I mean, like if these characters in this movie took like a bad turn, then they could easily become little Elizabeth Holmes. But it is so good. It's Olivia Wilde's directorial debut as a feature filmmaker. And so I feel like you always kind of approach these sorts of things like, okay, we'll see how good this is. But she's been doing like music videos and stuff like that for a second. So
Been rooting for her. She directed a Red Hot Chili Peppers video.
Yeah.
Is what you're referring to, but it was all girl skating. It's a great video.
Yeah. I mean, she's like genuinely, she has a lot of vision. She knows what she's doing. And like,
everybody already loves her from when she played Alex on the OC.
Well, of course. Yes. But she's like a real deal director, and like the script is so funny. Apparently it was like a blacklist script like 10 years ago or something like that. So it's really been around for a second, but then it finally got made after, you know, development hell or whatever. And it's like, I wish it would not have had to go through all of that to like make
it to the
screen.
Was that your favorite thing from South By?
Well, that was the thing last night where I was like, I was at the premiere for it. Most of the stuff I've been seeing has been premieres in the Paramount Theater with like all the cast and crew there. And that's like a very buzzy sort of you can't hear your own thoughts type of environment to be in. And
yeah, sometimes, you were saying with us.
I want to see it again because I feel like it was so hype in there. I just could not hear my own thoughts. But with Booksmart, and I was super tired when I went into Booksmart, and I was sitting right next to, I was there with Jada Yuan, my colleague / 52 Places world traveler. and we were both like zonked out when we sat down. And then like, as soon as the credits started rolling, we're like, did we just watch the next classic a la Clueless or Mean Girls or something like that? Like it felt like a really big deal movie to see there. It's really, really funny. It's like Beanie Siegel and Caitlin Dever are like these two overachieving girls who realize like they didn't need to overachieve so much because all the like partying kids and sexually active kids in their high school all got into Ivy Leagues too. So they have like one last night to so that they can say they had fun in high school. So they like try to go to all these different parties, and it's very kind of super bad, like one crazy night type thing, but it's just so charming and the two leads are so amazing. So like, I would definitely, I'm giving it the Night Call seal of approval.
in advance?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. We accept.
Yeah.
Today's episode of Night Call is brought to you by Brewmate. The mission at Brewmate is to create the perfect drinking experience by ensuring every sip of your favorite adult beverage is just as refreshing as the first, no matter where life takes you. The great thing about Brewmate is that they designed really, really beautiful beverage containers that are safe for glass-free zones, which is awesome. Not to say that if you're having a child's birthday party, you necessarily need to be drinking wine or beer, but if you do necessarily need to be drinking wine or beer, you can carry it in a really stylish vessel from Brewmate. They have a really wide array of products that are all gorgeous. Unlike other brands that only cater to the outdoorsman or outdoor fanatic, Brewmate has a stylish solution for everyone. They have over 30 color options to choose from, including matte, glossy, and glitter finishes to match your drink of choice, style, and personality. I'm particularly a fan of the matte black, and I also like the Carrara marble and the wood. Their BevGuard technology ensures there's never a metallic aftertaste. Drinks taste great, and they're the same temperature from the first sip to the last, which is awesome. If you're sick and tired of hauling around ice and being limited by glass-free zones, Brewmate's products are all glass-free zone friendly, and they don't require any ice to keep your beverages at the perfect temperature. You can pour it, put it in your bag, and go wherever you'd like without lugging around an inconvenient heavy cooler or ice. Brewmate works with hot or cold beverages, so it's great for keeping alcohol cold, but amazing at keeping things warm too, so you can use it for coffee and tea in the morning and end the night with an ice cold one. Right now, Brewmate is giving our listeners a special discount of 15% off your first order when you go to www.brewmate.com and use our code NIGHTCALL. That's 15% off when you use our code NIGHTCALL at brewmate.com, brewmate.com. Don't let summer heat ruin your drink. Go to brewmate.com and beat the heat this summer. That's brewmate.com, code NIGHTCALL.
Something else that got the Night Call seal of approval in advance was the inventor out for blood in Silicon Valley. I think we are just generally interested in sociopaths, especially like business sociopaths.
Yes. I mean, so Elizabeth Holmes was a very, very, very private person. And for some reason, you can tell that just by looking at her. She doesn't blink very much.
Yeah,
the blinking which was mentioned weird. In the film.
You can just
tell.
And
then you are trying to figure out what's so off about her. And first of all, it's that she does a fake voice.
Which is, by the way,
but
not
goes,
mentioned
in
the documentary.
It goes in and out. I think somebody does mention it, that she does it when she's, like, playing herself for an interview or something. But, like, person to person, it would kind of lessen. I mean, I think she has a naturally kind of lower voice, but...
Well,
but she really plays it up in interviews.
I don't know.
There are truthers out there. There was a segment from a podcast that you can find on YouTube where she slips and her voice is much higher.
Yeah.
Really?
And there's a podcast about it that I think people were saying also they found like people who knew her before and were like, that's new.
It's wild.
But she also wears the Steve Jobs turtlenecks all the time. She doesn't blink. I have a pet theory that she's maybe wearing color contacts.
No, really?
They're very intense. And when they show the older pictures of her, it looked like she had brown eyes. And I was like, wouldn't put it past her.
Right.
Well, the thing that's so jarring in it is, I mean, it's kind of skipping forward. First of all, this is a documentary by Alex Gibney, who's like done all of the big HBR documentaries recently. He did
Going Clear.
Yeah.
Enron.
He did the Enron one.
Interestingly, Elizabeth Holmes's father worked at Enron.
That explains it all, I think. And they don't maybe bring that up in the documentary?
No, they
don't. I think they maybe briefly mention it, but you have to, you know,
blink
look
and you'll
into
miss it. Right, but you're like, no wonder she's a scammer. She, like, her dad was a scammer, and they, like, lost a lot of money, apparently.
Yes. And they ran, I mean, all of their friends were, like, these kind of luminaries, and I guess that her, like, great-great grandfather has like a hospital named after
him. she used just rich white privilege to scam her way to the top of Silicon Valley. But again, it's like the people she put on the board, none of them were scientists.
Right.
They were all
Henry Kissinger,
which is your first clue that something may be amiss. He's also on the International Olympic Committee. He gets paid to go to the Olympics. Yeah, just like a bunch of really bad people from politics that were connected to her family because she had like DC connections.
Yeah.
And then she got a bunch of seed money. It was like she made the company exist based on this idea that she could create a blood test from a pinprick sample of blood.
Well, for anyone who's not familiar with Elizabeth Holmes, her company Theranos is basically... The origin story is that she was terribly afraid of needles, and her mother and aunt, or like another family member, were so afraid of needles that they would faint. So her idea is that instead of drawing from the vein, you do a pinprick, you get a tiny, tiny sample of blood, and then you feed it into this machine called the Edison, which later I think she tried to rebrand as Minilab, which looks like a small, you know, printer, basically.
Yeah.
And that would be able to run a battery of tests, like 250 different blood tests. But in actuality, when this was rolled out, the pinprick wasn't enough blood. You actually had to do the regular draw. And she was lying when she said that the tests were being performed by the Edison because they actually were being performed by the more traditional blood testing machines that are big and bought from third parties.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of stuff that the documentary goes into, like, you know, drawing on the irony of calling the box the Edison because so many of like Thomas Edison's patents were things that he also did not really know how to do, but would say he did them and find some way to, like, you know, do a demo at a World's Fair or whatever and make people believe he'd done it. And then in the background, you know, work
like
until he actually gets there.
There's a thing I couldn't believe they didn't use in the documentary because they were using other stock footagey things where I was like waiting for like, here's the stock footage about the Mechanical Turk, which is like this famous fake automaton. Mm-hmm. It was like supposedly a chess playing robot, I think. Uh-huh. And then it turned out to be just a guy.
Oh.
But they brought it places and presented it as like, it's a robot that plays chess and can like, you know, just see your moves and like play against you. But it was really a guy in a box inside of it, like manipulating it. And so anything there's something like that, you're kind of like, yeah, you can like maybe trick people into thinking it works in like your lab environment. But that there were so many things about it.
Yeah, this is all the science version of the stuff we were talking about last week with the psychics and spirituality. It's like you take advantage of the stuff that people want to believe in. And you make it just credible enough that they'll look over any of the like cracks or inconsistencies or something. Because people really wanted this. Like it would have been like a real disruptor of the entire diagnostics industry.
Right.
Which
but
is,
they
like,
show
a huge
like
thing.
There's a professor immediately who's like, you can't do that. It won't work.
Yeah.
You know.
And she had declined to kind of work with Elizabeth Holmes on the project and passed her on to someone else.
And then that person got taken in by the crazy eyes.
A lot of people got taken in.
That woman is amazing.
A lot of old white men especially
got
taken in.
A lot of old white men got taken in. And
the professor is amazing though, because she's so like, she does not give a fuck anymore.
Yeah,
she's a good character in the documentary.
Yeah, she's one of the good people. Everybody else gassed up Elizabeth Holmes because she was like the perfect embodiment of what Silicon Valley wants to believe about itself. And
well, she was one of the only female like CEOs in one of these disruptive sector disrupting industries. And so there was a lot of incentive to play that up for, you know, that she's this
well,
modern
also, like,
American
she,
hero.
She bought
something.
Her way in, but like so did the rest of them. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing too, is when they were like, well, everybody liked all the move fast and break things, but like you can't do that in medicine. And I'm like, you shouldn't do that in other things either. Like it's always just like breaking labor laws, you know, is what it always is. Well, that's what the break
that's,
things is.
Yeah, that's what gets
like,
broken.
With Uber is also like a big fucked up company that like just keeps secrets about itself. All these companies are just like, well, we can't tell you.
What's really interesting about the threat posed by Theranos was eventually towards the end of the documentary, they talk about how people were coming in to be tested for syphilis and nobody was really trained.
That was the only test they could get the machine to do was to test for syphilis.
Right. But it's also like the separation of the carpet world, which was like the, you know, kind of slick Silicon Valley, like Elizabeth Holmes was like wandering the halls in this glossy building. And then the tile floors where the lab technicians were working. And I think it was, you know, there, like in the science realm, that people finally came forward and were like, hey, this science is bullshit. Like, I would not trust these test results. No one should trust these test results. It was, you know, it wasn't in the documentary, but I think it was in a Vanity Fair article about her, maybe. There have been a bunch of articles, obviously, over the past year or so.
All of which we read last
night. But about her dog. She has a Siberian.
Balto.
Balto, the Siberian husky, who she told everyone was a wolf. But she would bring him to work, and he would contaminate samples by shedding, and he wasn't housebroken.
No, it was just, like, peeing everywhere all over the place.
It was a real
mess. And she would just pretend it wasn't happening. And I think that's just her general attitude to life, and it takes you so far.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. It's just like people would come to her and be like, it's not working. It's never going to work. And she was just like, you're not trying
hard
enough.
Well, she was impenetrable.
Yeah.
I mean, she wouldn't disclose any of the mechanics of the machines that she had designed or, you know, had kind of used other people's ingenuity to help design. I think that was one of the people who she worked with, Ian Gibbons, who was one of the scientists that, you know, she kind of took some of his work and brought him on the board, and he eventually committed suicide.
That was real sad.
It was super sad. And his widow, you know, talked about how Elizabeth Holmes had called up after he died, and instead of offering her condolences, was like, hey, I'm going to need everything, all of his paperwork that related to Theranos, because I don't want it to get out.
Yeah, because this was really like late in the, like, I think that the kind of noose was tightening around them. So she was getting like super paranoid about everything.
Yeah, she never breaks in the documentary because they don't get any like new footage with her. A lot of it comes from the stuff that Errol Morris
That's like the funny subtext
of the documentary is the documentarian feuding with Errol Morris.
It's total about, shade like, on Errol Morris.
It's so shady
there,
to Errol Morris.
He's sitting there like totally credible, like, you know, crossed arms in his director's chair, like, you know, asking her to tell everybody why she's a genius. And it's like, but that footage is incredible because that's the stuff where you're like, you feel like you're looking at this mask of a human, because, you know, the Interrotron is the thing that he invented, where it's like, so the interviewer, the way that the camera is set up, it's set up so that the person is having an eye-to-eye conversation with the interviewer, but they're also looking right into the camera. So you get this, like, you get the unblinking stare, like, in all its glory with, like, ring light, 360 lighting around it. And you can just see, like, she says something at some point in
the
documentary.
She looks like an alien.
Yeah, but she also says, like, oh, yeah, I only sleep, like, 4 hours a night. Mm-hmm. And it's like, maybe you should sleep more. Like, you look tired. And I also feel like there's such a thing as, like, sleep psychosis. Like,
well, also, who knows if that's bad decisions. Who knows if anything she says is true?
Right.
Well, because it's all very buzzy. I mean, she's vegan, and these are her smoothies,
and she only has the one outfit because she doesn't want to think about how her looks. Right. And
it's like, I was thinking about it because I was like, not to like cape for her at all because she is a psycho, but it is that thing where you're like, well, why is she the only one who gets punished? Like, Mark Zuckerberg broke democracy.
I think, I mean, like,
She didn't even give anyone syphilis yet.
But this is not what she knows. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg definitely kind of, like, talked his way to a certain position. But at a certain point, it became something that he was well-versed in, whether he made good decisions or not.
I don't know if I agree with that, even.
I don't know if you could argue that. I definitely wouldn't say that he had a good grasp on the social and moral implications of what he'd built, but I think that he knew how to build a website, whereas Elizabeth Holmes really doesn't know how to analyze blood.
Right.
And that's like a pretty significant
difference.
She knows
how to sell that blood pill.
She does.
Oh my God.
Sell that pill.
I still feel like the worst horror scene that I'm going to see in any movie this year is the computer generated reenactment of what happens inside of the Edison
box. Yeah, when they show the blood just splashing around.
Like, the blood is splashing around, like the little glass vials are getting cracked and there's just like blood splatters all over
the
place.
And then the gloved hand comes in reaching around.
It's the best.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so
like,
horrifying.
It made me think about Velvet Buzzsaw too.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's like a black box. It's like a metaphor for the company. It's like, you can't see what happens inside, and then like inside,
if you try to go inside, you might get stabbed with a blood needle
and see all the like encrusted blood all over everything.
Yeah, that stuff was pretty incredible. Very unforgettable imagery.
If I had a criticism though, I feel like it didn't go deep enough into the psychological study of Elizabeth Holmes.
I could have watched 5 more hours.
I could have, and I would have wanted to know, like, I really would have liked to have had more insight into, like, her upbringing and, you know, how she kind of, like, her parents kind of, according to one interview I read with this guy who worked with his parents, or with her parents, that her parents kind of tried to, like, get her into Stanford by sending her to this Mandarin program because they heard that that was, like, a good leg up, even though she really didn't have the grades. So it was kind of like she was, like, grifting from the beginning,
right,
but
well,
didn't
she was grifting
know.
In the way that, like, all rich people are grifting their way into, right. like, opportunities that they don't earn.
Yeah.
It was like, and she used it to her advantage the way that other people do. She just picked a really bad thing to do with it.
Yeah.
But it was so weirdly specific that you could sort of understand why people got caught up in like the fervor of it. Cause it's like, well, why else would she choose this thing?
Right.
Why wouldn't she at some point be like, this isn't working, I'm going to try another startup. But she was so like, it must succeed.
Yeah. I do think like the movie feels like just an ad for the Bad Blood book, the John Carreyrou book about her that came out a few months ago. Because it does, like, everything feels like you could go so much deeper in it. And I'm sure that the book does get deeper
into
all of it.
It's also, like, maybe it's comforting to us because it's, like, a story about the power of journalism.
Right. I mean, that is the, like, emotional core.
The Enron doc is the same.
And yeah.
in the same thing, it's like they think you're stupid, so they say things in front of you that right. they shouldn't say.
But there's also the guy from Forbes who put her on the cover of Forbes and then later has this reckoning.
He
of
was,
realizing,
yeah. He was
I mean, he
out.
Was upset. Yeah. And that was great
right,
to
but
see.
But again, like, what if they did that to, like, Airbnb and stuff? Like, other companies that are, like, grifters that have grifted their way into a position, but, like, it's all a Ponzi scheme.
Right.
All the startups are Ponzi schemes.
But I think what's different about this is that you would at least I would think that in medicine, you know, in the kind of like disruptor culture or whatever, there's really it should be that if you want to get a blood test, you have options other than Quest
yes.
and you can do it yeah. yourself and it's cheaper.
If
there were a
like,
way to do it.
I feel like a nurse should do it.
I mean, I don't know. I use the Heal app. Again, not an ad.
But I
really love the Heal app. And I'm interested because I'm like, okay, that solved a medical problem. And medicine, it seems, you would think, would be a very high priority to improve how we have, you know, access to medicine beyond just healthcare.
I don't trust companies. I mean, obviously, pharmaceutical companies are doing the same
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're all, it's all already a company.
But
it's just like one is a differently principled one than the other. Like,
I was surprised when people started doing 23andMe because I was like, you could turn this into eugenics. And then they did. But it's like, people are sort of less scared to like send their blood away in an envelope than maybe I would be. I would not give anyone my blood.
Here's the question though. If you needed a blood test, for instance, and you didn't have insurance or your insurance.
Well,
I'm saying
the idea that they were selling of like it'll be in Walgreens was like not a terrible idea.
That's the thing.
Like a licensed practitioner.
Right.
But
right.
that isn't how it
That's
turned
why
out.
It's so disappointing, though, I think, and why it's different than some of the other companies is because when you consider Airbnb, I mean, that's like a convenience and it's not a good company, but it also isn't like the stakes are much lower. Like you could stay at a hotel, but for someone who's having trouble getting access to a doctor for a blood test.
Yeah, but
all of a sudden, like that's a high priority.
Yeah, that's much more like you must get this.
And we know someone.
I feel like Tess, it's probably different for you because you have kids, but like I feel like I'm still not at the age yet where like medical stuff is on my mind on like a month to month basis. And like the idea of like getting diagnostics run and stuff. Like aside
from
when
saying, cut a corner, there's a reason.
But it's not necessarily cutting a corner. I mean, for like, okay.
I mean, if
for
it had
instance,
worked, then I think we'd feel differently about it.
Exactly.
That's the main thing. Like the whole thing is just the illusion around it. If this was a woman who really knew what she was doing, and the Edison worked, and the blood sampling worked, then this would be a completely different story. Like
even if
it did disrupt the existing diagnostic industry, it would be a conversation not unlike these other industries that have been disrupted, and there'd be like plenty of casualties within that. But I think it would be a different discussion than this, where it's just like this is about a cult of personality that made us believe in something.
I think it's also a core bad idea. That's what I'm saying. I think I would not give my blood to a private company selling me this because it should be publicly invested. We shouldn't have to go to fucking tech startups to get healthcare.
Right.
We should invest into
healthcare.
The twist is all these companies are going public this year, which is going to be very interesting, I think. And also probably ruin San Francisco once and for all.
It's been ruined. But again, I feel like there could be a pushback when people are like, no, we don't want this. We want infrastructure that means we don't need the blood machines.
No, I totally agree. But I also think that,
you see the crazy investments that people in Silicon Valley get for their terrible ideas, you're like, what if we invested this money into medical infrastructure?
I agree. I think what my point was is that people were very eager to invest in this because the idea of making, you know, certain medical diagnostics available to people who can't afford them, who put it off and end up dying or whatever, it was exciting, even though it was
a fraud, a get-rich-quick scam.
Yes. I don't know. I think that people
I don't think
were
Henry Kissinger was like, ooh, I can't wait to help anyone. That's not his thing. People just wanted to make money. They thought it was a way to make money by exploiting people who can't afford healthcare into having to, like, get the blood pill instead.
But some of the scientists who got on board early and like the phlebotomist trainer,
the scientists
for instance,
who wanted
they
to
were
make
like, this is great.
Right. But they also knew it wasn't going to work.
I mean, there was probably a time, like, before there were blood pressure machines in Walgreens, like, and you had to go to a doctor to do that. Now we think of that as a much more casual thing to get done. Right. Like, it's not a big deal that you have to, like, make a doctor's appointment to go get your blood pressure taken. Like, you can just do that at Walgreens or whatever.
8, 5, 12, 12, 15.
She Kills is a Shudder original podcast by and about women in horror, hosted by Adrienne Barbeau from The Fog and Creepshow. Guests include beloved stars like Barbara Crampton, Jennifer Tilly, and Dee Wallace, genre innovators like Anna Biller, Alex Esso, and Pollyanna McIntosh, and writers, critics, and horror experts like Blair Bercy, Gray Drake, and Dana Schwartz. She Kills explores the beginning of horror, where women were kill fodder, to the standalone modern women of horror who broke the mold, featuring the dynamic actresses from those films. We're going from Babe in the Woods to Badass with a Shotgun and everything in between with the unique and richly interesting conversations that only women in horror who love horror and who examine horror can provide. She Kills debuts on March 1st. All 10 episodes will be available on Shudder March 1st. Episode 1 will come out on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you catch your podcasts on March 1st, with episodes being released twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays.
12, 9, 20, 5, 14, 5, 18, 19. I'm gonna go with bring back in-house doctor visits.
Well, that's why I mentioned Heal, is because, like, my daughter had to go to the doctor today. And it's across town. You often, like, have to wait for an appointment, even if it's a not well visit for a little kid. And it's just to check their ears, check their nose, check their throat. Mm-hmm. It's like a 3-hour thing. It's expensive even with insurance. Then I thought, like, you know, I think that Heal is, like, a brilliant app. And there are others like it, like, I think, Doctor on Demand. But the idea that you have doctors who come to your house for things that are not life-threatening.
They but won't is it come like an it Uber of doctor? Like, no, how do you know it's a real doctor and not someone who, like, said they were a doctor?
These are UCLA doctors. And so you can look at their, you know, you can view who the doctor is and where they went to school and everything. I've used it a bunch. And, like, I don't know that I would want to use that in a life-threatening emergency. And in fact, when I tried, they were like, no, go to the doctor. But, I mean, it's not necessarily like a lot of people are, you know, saying, like, I have the time, I have the money to just go to the doctor when I feel sick. So there have to be alternatives until we get the infrastructure going.
I've gotten sick so many times since I've lived in New York. Like, I used to never get sick at all. And now it's, like, constantly. Like, I do urgent care, which is, like, the middle point between those two things, right? Like,
it's broken. We all agree it's broken. Yeah. I just don't think startups are going to fix anything for anybody ever. Well, that's my hard take on that.
I'm excited for our listeners to see the doc. I reviewed it at Sundance, where it premiered in January. So you can all link to that somewhere. I think that it probably, like, wisely doesn't get too much into this stuff, because this, like, as we can see, this is, like, such a bigger problem that, like, Theranos.
Yeah, I sort of wanted it to get into that, but it also doesn't really get that much into, like, Silicon Valley just sort of being a big grift and, like...
I think it does. To the extent that, like, it can, and it's in the time that it has. As much as we're, like, obsessed over her persona and the weirdness and, like, her voice and all that stuff, I do think my one thing with the film is that, like, it really fixated on that surface. And maybe it's because they couldn't get so much into her, like, you know, more detailed stuff about her past or anything like that, or what was actually up with her. So it just, like, there's so much staring into her eyes in this movie.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And you're looking for something. They
focus really a lot of time on her aesthetic.
Looks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think she's a very striking looking person. And so you do get this, like, sense of who she is by just looking at her. But it is interesting that they didn't, like, crack that too much in the documentary. Yeah. I would have loved if they'd gone deeper into that. And I'm assuming that there's an interesting reason why they didn't.
It felt very, like, male gazy in a way that, like, not the way we usually think of that being used, but it did feel like an older man being like, what the fuck is this creature?
It was a little bit Basic Instinct.
Yes.
To be honest, you know, where you're like, this woman is, like, using, like the fact that everyone will look at her because she's like a white blonde woman, mm-hmm. like against people to her benefit.
Yeah. She could have used some better sweaters, honestly.
I know.
The Steve Jobs thing was just so stupid. It worked so well on people. Yeah. And like she has a thing apparently where she would make them keep the office temperature at 60 degrees so she could wear
her vest, her puppy vest,
which is also a thing Nixon did.
Really?
Nixon made them keep it really cold in the White House so he could have a fire in the fireplace all the time.
You know that fires are really inefficient at heating the room. It's true. Suck the air right up the...
He was just having a little fireside chat with Checkers.
Yeah.
She now lives in San Francisco and dates some other guy and goes to Burning Man.
A younger man.
And blames everyone for her downfall and not herself and thinks she's going to have a comeback and definitely doesn't think she's going to jail. Well. So that's also fascinating.
We shall see.
We stan an entrepreneurial legend.
But yeah, again, I'm like, she should go to jail. I don't know. I don't even know if I care if she goes to jail. I mean, nothing.
I think she has to be. I mean, she has been barred from working in a lab, which is good enough for me.
Yeah, she should be bounced out. But like, it's funny how she's just doubling down on like, well, like.
But that's kind of her secret sauce, is that she just will not admit culpability.
Which you have to do to be a CEO, maybe?
Yes,
you have to believe your own lies.
Yeah.
Believe your own bullshit.
Hey, guys, do you feel like taking a night call?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay. Hi, night call. At a Sunday family lunch, I was talking with one of my favorite humans, Chris, my sister-in-law, who happens to be a middle school science teacher. She often has interesting science anecdotes that we collectively geek out over. The latest was no exception. Zombie crickets from Nat Geo. Horsehair worm, Paragordius varius. House cricket, Achita domesticus. The house cricket loses its will and its life to the horsehair worm. Larvae of the parasite infiltrate the cricket when it scavenges dead insects, then grow inside it. The cricket is terrestrial, but the adult stage of the worm's life cycle is aquatic. So when the mature worm is ready to emerge, it alters the brain of its host, driving the cricket to abandon the safety of land and take a suicidal leap into the nearest body of water. As the cricket drowns, an adult worm emerges, sometimes a foot in length.
Why is the worm so long?
I don't know. If you have a subscription to National Geographic, there's a brilliant long read entitled Mind Suckers from the November 2014 edition.
Oh,
we will link
God.
To that. Night calls always seem like a safe place for all things insects. Thought y'all might appreciate the insanity of the natural order. Take care, Anna. Guys, discuss.
Woo.
This is insane. I've never heard of this before.
I have a related... Okay, so by the way, we got this a little while ago. Last night, there was a cricket in my bathtub. This happens a lot where crickets end up in my bathtub. Don't know why that is.
Because they come in from
the faucet,
the drain, the faucet.
I don't know. But then I was like, is it trying to... It was an empty bathtub, but I was like, is it just waiting for me to fill this so it can die and a giant worm can come out? No, thank you.
Do they get thirsty the way that ants do? Like ants will always seek out, like they'll hang around your drain and stuff just get that water.
It's weird. I mean, the crickets have been out in full force recently, the past couple of nights in LA, making a big cricket racket. But I did not hear them when it was raining, so I assume they go away when it rains. This is based on no science at all, just me sitting outside. I just think it's really interesting that they get driven like insane by these brain
by brain parasites.
Like, could a cricket be driven insane? Is it sane to begin with? It's a cricket.
I think it's creepy. Like, there are parasites, I guess, that like can alter the brain in different animals. Like, I don't know, like Lyme disease or like ticks and stuff like that are probably like an example. Although, is Lyme disease even real? I feel like it's real, but
Lyme disease is real.
Lyme disease is real. There are things that are not Lyme disease
that people say are Lyme disease.
We're all talking specifically about Yolanda.
Yes.
Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Munchausens.
I think what happened with her, this is my theory about her, is all of her shit was related to having like leaky breast implants, I think.
Oh, really?
And then she got them removed finally. I'm not saying she didn't maybe also have Lyme disease.
No, she talked about that. Yeah, I remember.
But yeah, she got her breast implants removed and I think she's maybe like been better. I think maybe that was part of what was going on.
I felt really sad for her because there's nothing real or false when you're that obsessed.
No,
with
I mean,
your
that was a
state of being.
That was
hard.
A like a Lars von Trier movie.
Yeah, it was
inside
yeah.
that show with her and like her giant fridge that's only vegetables and like a giant bowl of lemons.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Aspirational.
Anyway.
And yet.
But yeah, I think the creepy thing about this is that it's like one on one as opposed to like, I don't know, having like a bunch of like small parasites that like are
gonna,
on like a much.
I'm going to go with any parasite as a scary parasite.
Well,
bad news for you, Molly.
Like, takes over. It's like a body snatcher, but with like a cricket. Oh my god! And the illustration, the like CGI recreation.
There's a lot of body snatchers.
Yeah,
we should do more. If
are good parasites, though. You know, my mom. I remember being really little, and my mom was like, you know those. Like tiny microscopic organisms that walk on your eyelashes and eyebrows. And I was like, no. And she was like, they look like little donkeys. And so the other night I was telling my kids about it and I showed them a picture. I don't remember what these
and
like
went,
tiny little creatures. Yeah. And they were just like, get them off. And I was like, no, they gotta stay because they probably
I think you've told
guys.
Me this before because yeah. I remember the tiny little donkeys. A nice way to think about parasites. Some parasites are helpful.
What if we're just parasites?
We are parasites.
On a large organism.
We are 100%
we're
parasites.
We're totally That's killing the organism right
we're
now.
We're part of the voluntary extinction project.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is a really great night email. I'm glad that Anna brought this to our attention.
Yeah, crickets are lucky, I think, also.
Yeah, you're not supposed to kill them.
Yeah.
We've talked about this on the podcast because there was one time when I had one in the bathtub and I tried to save it and accidentally chopped off its head. Aww. And then was like, what do I do? Just like cursed. It's like breaking a mirror.
Hereditary.
I was like, no! Yeah. I love crickets.
I like to try to be nice to all the bugs. It's coming in
Except
contact.
Except for mosquitoes, the deadliest animal, which don't forget, it's your duty to kill mosquitoes.
I know, but even then, it's like they're just, you know, just looking for a bite.
No, Molly, no. You guys made me watch. You decided.
Don't give me any blame for
this. I'll just say.
Hey.
This was all Emily's choice.
We put out a call for erotic thrillers because this is our.
Erotic Odyssey.
This is our Erotic Odyssey segment. So we went through, we got a bunch of really great suggestions, and we settled on Body of Evidence.
Well, there's a lot of bodies to get through. There are a lot of body movies, Body Double.
Body Heat.
Body of Evidence. And I had not seen Body of Evidence.
I did not. I thought it was like a beloved classic.
None of us had seen it.
Oh.
Okay.
No. I thought this was like a movie that had made an imprint on you.
No, absolutely not.
Showtime
I mean, I'd always been curious about the Madonna and Willem Dafoe movie, but like I had not seen it.
Well.
Fun thing about this movie, it takes place in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
For no reason.
It's the Portlandia of the 90s.
It takes place in yuppie Portland, which was amazing because I didn't even know that existed.
It's like the most heated debate over whether or not that what Madonna lives in this movie was a houseboat.
It was a houseboat.
It was clearly a houseboat. My husband was
just
like no, it's
just like Andrew Cunanan at the end of American Crime Story.
The whole thing was totally Cunanan. Yes. But my husband was like, no, it's on a peninsula. It's too nice to be a houseboat. I was like, that is a luxury
sounds
houseboat.
Sounds like your husband could work for Theranos.
You're right.
That sounds like a dog that's
houseboat
a wolf.
I want to get into this. I know it's a houseboat because in the iTunes summary for this movie, where you
it
can
says,
rent this
chased
movie
to a houseboat.
The lean price of $3.99, it says, sex bomb Rebecca Carlson, played by Madonna, parades around naked in front of the open windows of her houseboat at all hours, even while the lobstermen couch crabs.
That was not a scene
that
in the movie.
That was not in the movie.
Not in the movie.
But apparently it's in the trailer.
It's in the
trailer. I'm not kidding.
Okay.
In the trailer, they were like, there's a part in the trailer where she walks naked back into her houseboat, but it's not in the movie.
Is this pre or post Body Double? Because that's another like female exhibitionist one. That's the De Palma movie. I feel like there's a lot.
This was 93, right? I think this
made me feel like we should do Basic Instinct next.
Well, it's because this was Basic Instinct ripoff. Yeah,
but it's not because they were made at the same time.
They were made at the same time. Shooting began only 2 weeks after Basic Instinct.
It's just the same movie, but bad. Yeah. And the only reason it's bad is because Madonna is terrible.
No, there are so many reasons why it's bad.
No, because I was saying it's like it's got all the erotic thriller repertory players, including Julianne Moore and Ann Archer. Julianne Moore is also in Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Yes,
Ann Archer is also in Fatal Attraction. Ann Archer and Julianne Moore are in Shortcuts together. Sorry, yeah. I'm on one.
We should try to do this as a 6 degrees type journey because Ann Archer is the connector between Fatal Attraction and Body of Evidence. So that means next time we have to do...
And Michael Douglas is in all of them.
Yeah, Michael Douglas.
Except for this one in which he's played by Willem Dafoe.
If only he'd been in this one. I was not taken by Willem Dafoe's performance. And in fact, I have to shout out how bad the score was.
By Graham Revell.
Graham Revell, who is so good. At one point, there's a sex scene that's set to what sounds like
a choral,
like Catholic Enya.
Yes.
Okay, you were there for that.
Yes. Yeah,
it's because it's softcore.
It was horrible.
It's early 90s softcore. I was like, this movie's terrible. If I had seen it at 2 a.m. on Cinemax at like a friend's house at a sleepover, I would have thought about it for the rest of my life.
Right. It's like really? It's got the kind of like bizarre, not at all real to life sex choreography that if you happen to see it as a kid, you're like, oh my God, is that what it's like?
It harkens to a time before porn was readily available when like you get what you get and you don't get upset.
Exactly.
They didn't use body doubles in the movie and the sex scenes were like semi-improvised apparently because Madonna just like did whatever she wanted.
Like, as she does.
As she does. So she wasn't supposed to pour wax on him 3 times.
The third time was the surprise.
It was a surprise. And he
but
was
the third
tied
time
up.
Was
her
on,
masturbation
was
scene
on,
also improvised.
The third time was like on his dick, right? Because it like there's
I think
no,
it was supposed to be like on his pelvis.
There's an insert shot of all of the wax drops where you see it like on his chest. And then the third one, that he's just staring down at his crotch and there's no cutaway. So I assumed she was dropping hot wax on his
dick. It's very possible.
I have to say that I thought I had like solved the movie about 60% of the way through because there were like a lot of red herrings in this movie. And one of them was this scene out of nowhere where Willem Dafoe is like being offered a donut, okay, at work. And they're like, this guy randomly is like, eat the last donut. And then the camera zooms in on this one donut. And then it's like, that's it. Right. And then later, Madonna's whole MO is that she preys on men with heart conditions and gets written into their will. And at one point, they're kind of like being coy with each other. And Willem Dafoe's like, oh, well, do you see anyone in this restaurant who's into like your kind of your thing, your brand of kink? And she was like, yeah, but he doesn't know it yet.
That's a
and
good
I was like,
scene.
Oh, he
yeah,
has
that's
a heart
the only
condition.
Good part in the movie. Yeah.
He has a heart condition. That's why he didn't eat the last donut.
Yes.
So she's going to like try and kill Willem Dafoe.
Oh, I like how you motivated this.
But why is the donut in it was wrong.
I thought.
What's the deal with that donut?
Yeah, I thought it was about the cocaine use.
It was not a powdered donut.
I thought it was a powdered donut. And it reminded me of in Basic Instinct when everyone's like casually making fun of Michael Douglas for shooting a Taurus when he was all coked out of his brain.
Yeah.
They're all like, haha, shooter, you want a Diet Coke?
Oh, also so weird in this movie is how like everything hinges on nasal spray that has been contaminated with cocaine.
Yeah. Everything about it is weird, except again, I feel like if it was somebody other than Madonna, like again, like Fatal Attraction, you're like, it's not that he's unhappy with his wife. His wife is Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
And she's like giving him the business.
It's
also
like the most nothing character also. The basic gist of this movie, it is basically just Basic Instinct. Madonna is a woman who has a boy, like a rich older boyfriend who is found dead watching one of their sex tapes and he's been like handcuffed to a bed.
Fornicated to death, as they say.
She's the murder weapon.
She was the murder weapon. She is the body of evidence. And then all, you know, everybody thinks that she did it, but Willem Dafoe is the lawyer who decides to represent her for reasons unknown. He just walks up to her at a funeral and says, "Do you need representation?" while she's crying. And then they start working together. Again, I don't know anything about like legal dramas at all because I never watched Law and Order. But like when he's like, I don't ask my clients whether or not they've done it. I'm like, don't all lawyers have to ask their clients whether or not they've done it?
Yes, but I also watched Reversal of Fortune last night as a chaser, which is another like hero lawyer who's like, I don't even care if you murdered them or not. It's about the law. It's about proving there are holes in the story or right. whatever.
Yeah, so he's trying to like represent her as like this is going to become a case about her sex life and like she can do whatever she wants, yeah. but this is about whether or not she actually killed him. Of course, they start having an affair, and the affair doesn't really lead to anything except for the fact that they're having an affair.
Well, it leads to, as in other erotic thrillers, a bunch of crazy sex scenes.
Yes.
Staged in places other than a bed.
Elevator.
Staircase.
Another garage. Elevator. That's two count yeah. on elevators.
They're all modes of conveyance, like up or down. Like, because there's yeah. the first one's on a staircase where they're like crawling up over each other on the stairs.
Sexiest thing in the world, as everyone knows. Every staircase like that smells like pee. I mean, it's like, it can be in a house, it cannot. It could be in a parking garage, it doesn't matter.
I think in the parking garage, until they got to the car, I was like, oh, what are they going to do? It's on the floor, the parking garage.
She climbs up on top of the car, and he goes down on her from below.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's just Willem Dafoe going down on Madonna.
Yeah.
Like 100%.
Yeah.
They did not use body doubles. He's just... It is kind. That's the movie's kind of worth watching for that.
Yeah, it's kind of insane
still
that
not.
It exists.
Why was it like made for Madonna? It's really strange to me looking at this movie. Like she, so apparently the IMDb like trivia section has some really good factoids, including that she was like, "Yeah, the sex scenes like didn't turn me on at all. I just viewed them as almost like scientific." And Dafoe was like, "No, they were super sexy to me."
Well, they like, also really? Had the fatal really? Attraction thing where the ending got changed, and she was like, "It was right. misogyny." It was because it was like supposed to end with
spoiler
her getting
alert.
Away with it, and spoiler alert, she gets killed.
Yeah, she gets punished.
Yeah, and she was like, the whole point was supposed to be like that she shouldn't get punished, even if she did do it. Which spoiler alert, she did.
Yeah.
Again, I was like, not. I enjoyed the movie because it was like shot well and
it's
lit
so
fun.
That like 80s,
is that 90s, 40s?
Like,
yeah,
everything has like there's a fog machine in every scene. Like everything yeah. has been, you know,
Venetian blinds.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
the Venetian. Oh my god,
it made me
so want to
watch
blinds.
Dick Tracy, which is maybe the only defensible
well,
Madonna performance.
I know that Molly reads the IMDb trivia. Did you also see this was the second movie in 2 years in which Madonna plays a character
yes.
who picks a bottle of champagne out of an ice bucket while wearing black underwear? The other was Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Is that crazy?
I would watch Dick Tracy. I think she's great in Desperately Seeking Susan because
yes.
she's playing herself.
Right.
Something about watching Madonna try to act makes me so uncomfortable.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Because it's like she's almost good at it. But no, she's not. It's like she's and this is like her fifth movie. It is that thing where you're like, why can't you take this skill set and just like transfer it over? But
she's such a good performer.
Different.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Gaga. It's like you're grading them on a curve of how bad you expect them to be.
Right.
Because most actors that are musicians are better at one thing or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they're like Liza Minnelli.
Steve Van Zandt.
Steve Van Zandt.
Yeah.
Great actor. That is true. Underrated.
Super underrated.
Possibly the greatest actor musician. Who also told Paul Simon to go fuck himself.
I know.
I think that this movie, and I feel like this is going to be a recurring thing, but I feel like a lot of, and I feel this way about Basic Instinct too, obviously, is that a lot of the reason this genre exists is because all these directors of a certain generation came up on Hitchcock and they're like, what if we did it with tits? Like that,
yeah.
that's
oh, for sure.
the entire
Which to me
MO.
Is still like the aim of cinema a little bit.
that's why we're all here.
That's why we all, I also just like how when we start the Erotic Odyssey segment, it's like we all just like lean back in our like bubble bath.
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
We're all so stoked
Luxuriate
about it.
Luxuriate in the softcore porn.
Right, because they all have like cool female protagonists.
Yeah, they're all these like really kind of, I mean, she's a pretty interesting character, even though this is a bad movie. Like, I
again,
think
but I was
paper,
saying, like, what if she was played by Julianne Moore? Could this movie be
right.
good?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't. I think the script is horrible. It's really one of those movies where you feel like it is an extraterrestrial screenwriter who's like, let's see. They all live on boats, these humans, right? Boats. And they dress up like in pearls and little tiny pillbox
hats. We have to do basic instincts.
This is the like Frasier era too, where like I guess the Pacific Northwest was like glamorous. It was like the same time as grunge, but it was like, what if the Pacific Northwest, instead of being the capital of grunge, was just where like it was like constant Hitchcock noir and all the ladies were berets and pearls.
I get the idea. It's like San Francisco has the opera and then you just keep going north. It gets like more opera-y, you know?
Yeah.
Till you get to Canada, the opera-iest of them all. But I loved whenever Madonna was in an art gallery in this movie, because it reminded me of like, the art gallery stuff in The Player, just her being like, my paintings, my art beret.
Yeah. I'm in artist mode now.
It's not a good movie at all, but I also...
And yet, I wasn't mad.
For some reason, we have collectively forgotten that there are all these like pretty explicit for an R-rated movie sex scenes between Will and Dafoe.
It was NC-17 originally.
It came out at the same time as The Sex Book, so it got overshadowed.
I think De Laurentiis was like, hey, can you postpone
this
book? Because otherwise this movie's just going to be pegged as kind of like a preview to your book. And she was like, nah, I'm going to do me. That's what I do. I'm Madonna. Listeners, if you have an erotic thriller that you would like to see featured on the podcast, or if you have any stories about zombie bugs, food, anything on your mind, please give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or an email at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And while you're at it, please review, rate, and subscribe to Night Call wherever you listen to podcasts.
I think we got to try to get to Hand the Rocks a Cradle just so we can continue with the...
Yes.
Or we just do all the bodies.
I want to come back around to Basic Instinct because I kept thinking about how it is.
But it's so similar. We got to like
wait
a little bit.
It's so similar, but it works for reasons I can't fully articulate. Right.
Before we wrap up this podcast, would you guys like to take one more Night Call?
Yeah.
Hey, Night Call. This is Dan from Encino. My question is, let's say that you came across incontrovertible proof of the existence of vampires or sea monsters or aliens. Do you think that your life could continue as normal, or would you have to dedicate your life to proving what you found? Or would you try to just hide and pretend that you hadn't discovered this unfathomable truth? Thanks.
That's a super interesting question.
I love this question. I think about this all the time. So it's the reason that I love Arrival, which I feel like I talk about on this podcast all the time. But I think that that's one of the only movies – about an alien, at least, where I think that the reaction is appropriate. Like Amy Adams literally just barfs after she has her first interaction with the aliens, because it's such a, it just completely turns your notion of the universe and like our place in it upside down. Like it's a paradigm shift and you would get nauseous. I think you would have like a physical reaction to that.
I always get nauseous.
How's that?
It's not that hard to make me nauseous. I get nauseous if I go on a hike.
But once you'd finished throwing up, what would you do?
Well, what if, not to take it to a different question like I always do, but what if you think you see vampires, but it's just a brain parasite?
Well, but this, it hinges on its incontrovertible proof.
Incontrovertible. I mean, I think it depends on what your job is. If you're a journalist, you should probably pivot to investigating it or something. I don't know if you're like any other kind of civilian, you know, you take it to the appropriate people to figure out what to do with it. But I don't think that your life continues apace. I think the only thing that I might like not act on, weirdly, and I just thought of this because I realized that it was one of the examples he listed, was the sea monster, because I think I would have just like, I would be insecure about the fact that like maybe this thing I thought was a new sea monster was like a known creature.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like...
So you just wouldn't trust yourself because of your lack of knowledge about the deep sea.
I thought you meant like because then they might hunt and kill it or like take it in and you're just protecting it like an E.T.
I think that's something that happens in movies. As bad as the world is, I really don't think that if we discovered a sea monster that like everybody would get into a contest to try to kill it. Like, I think that
yes, they would.
Well, they would try and capture it.
They would capture it and they would sell us its blood as a startup.
Right.
Well, if it was posing an immediate threat, maybe they would. Like, if it was like a Godzilla. But if it was just like a Leviathan type thing that was chilling out on its own, minding its own business underwater.
Doesn't Godzilla also just want to be loved? It's like,
I love Godzilla.
No,
me too. Yeah. No, but it's not Godzilla's fault.
No,
it's
Godzilla
the scientist's
is just
fault.
Like, it is, Godzilla is the fault of all of us.
Here's the issue with this question. It's not like a bad issue or a flaw with the question, but it's something to consider. Is like with Emily, you know, when Emily said, like, if it was a sea monster, you would lack the confidence to be able to describe what you had seen as being, like, uniquely sea monsterish. A vampire and alien. So, like, you get proof of aliens. I think you have, like, a pretty good base of people who would believe you and you could take this to them. Vampires, you're out of luck. Like, if I knew there were vampires, A, I wouldn't say anything because they'd come after me. And B, like, who wants to be on the side of people who think vampires are real?
Oh, me.
They really,
I do.
They've not had much credibility.
I would go be a blood source for vampires if they were
you
real.
You would? Emily, what?
I would, got I Anne Rice.
If there was the opportunity to walk the walk when it comes to my goth lifestyle, I would absolutely go to
you.
What if they?
In.
What if they feed off you to death though? Like they,
well, they
so
do,
often
and
do.
Then but then
it's
you
such a rush,
you cheat death because
such a rush, and you become a vampire,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so you
I
join
guess
them.
It would be like if they were good vampires who were just
good vampires,
well, like, you know, consensual vampires,
like bohemian
versus
vampires.
Like Peter Thiel vampires,
right?
Like, you know, blood. Jacuzzi, like,
yeah.
You know, sacrificing children in
no,
a blood rave
kind
of
yeah.
thing. But I don't know what authorities you'd go to.
With a vampire issue?
Yeah, it would have to be like...
go to Reddit.
No, not Reddit. I would go to like a council of witches.
You'd have to go to the Catholic Church, right?
No, absolutely
okay.
not. I would find a vampire expert.
So, Anne Rice. I mean, who?
Well, you would
Anne
have
vampire
to
go to Anne Rice.
The vampire expert. In that case, I think, like, because the question is, like, would you have to dedicate your life to proving this? Like, I think you would have to become the vampire expert because such a thing doesn't really exist in right now. Like, you would have to be that person because you had the firsthand experience with them.
Well, like Christian Slater in Interview with the Vampire when he's interviewing the vampire.
In a way, Emily, when you said you would just become one, I'm like, that would be the best move is to become a vampire and then be like a spokesman for the vampires.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be like, we exist, we're here. Like, I was a film critic at New York Magazine. Now I'm a vampire, and that's just what
sides
I do.
Both experiences.
I hope you would still be on the podcast, though, because that would be a really worthwhile. Like, you could dedicate your life minus one day a week.
We'd
to
have
just
to
being
actually record it at night, though. Spoiler: we don't record this
unless
podcast.
You're a Twilight vampire, and then you just shimmer in the sun while you play old timey baseball.
Also, you could come in the booth. We could turn off the lights. There's no window. Obviously,
you could usher me into the booth like Justin Bieber, like with the blanket
things about vampirism already fit well with our general lifestyle.
It's true.
That's the only thing where I would like maybe change my entire lifestyle around it. I think like everything else would be like I would be happy to be the whistleblower or something, and not whistleblower in a way like go kill the alien or whatever the thing may be, but I would be happy to be the person who was like, I have the video, I'm the person who brought this to the news. But like, I don't know that I would necessarily be spearheading the thing, but
I would like to be a Benicula.
Mm-hmm. So a rabbit vampire.
Yeah.
or did you mean that like figuratively?
I think you understand me. I found out about a new UFO cult that we'll go visit next time Emily's in town.
Oh, good.
Oh, great.
Great.
If you've got a question, a comment, or an erotic thriller, something to say about blood pills, maybe feelings about aliens, vampires, and sea monsters, give us a call at 240-46-NIGHT or email us.
And nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on social media at nightcallpodcast. On Instagram, Nightcall Pod, on Twitter, and Nightcall Podcast on Facebook. And please subscribe to us on iTunes. You can rate, review, and subscribe. Tell us what you think about the show. It helps more people find it. So we really appreciate you. And that's our show for this week.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to end death.